This is Coda Radio, episode 596 for November 19th, 2024. Hey, friend, welcome into Jupiter Broadcasting's weekly talk show, taking a pragmatic look at the art and the business of software development and the world of technology. My name is Chris, and over there, it's our host, Mr. Dominic, giving me storm tips. Hello, Mike.
USA gonna be okay.
Just tie it all down, right?
Listen, tie it down, and I don't know how this could possibly happen for you.
Yeah.
But if you get the opportunity to ride on the back of an alligator.
Yeah.
You just do it. You don't even think about it.
I think they've imported them because it's Microsoft Ignite this week. And, you know, they love to throw a party. You know, so.
You know, and they do have a campus down here in Tampa. So yeah. They have the hookup.
They import them. They import them for the event.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's a big show here, you know, up in the Seattle area. People love gators. They'll come and see them from miles away because we don't normally get to see them.
Honestly, I'm jealous. All the fun conferences happen by you.
Yeah. Well, it's that West Coast thing, you know. The West Coasters just love to throw tech conferences that are subsidized by big rich tech companies. They just love it, Mike.
Is it because of money?
Money. Yeah. The theme of Ignite that I watched this morning was the question, when is the right time to integrate AI into your company? The answer, right now.
Shocker.
The best time was last year. The next best time is right now. Okay, I'll get right on that, I guess. Hey, I want to mention, we do this here podcast live, typically on Tuesdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, and it's a lot of fun to have a live audience join us. We've also, for our members, as a perk, have just started recording the live stream, so you get some of the pre-stream clips and stuff. I'm still kind of putting it all together as an episode 600 thank you to our members, and if you're already a member or become one, you get access to a private RSS feed that gives you the whole show. And we have a chat room going 24/7. At coda.show/matrix. So you were getting real thoughtful this week and kind of thinking about dependency chains, especially in large projects. Not that this would ever be a problem, ever,
no,
for you.
No, it's all good.
No. Yeah, but I thought this was actually a pretty thought-provoking piece. You start with talking about dependency management and software development being akin to playing an elaborate game of Jenga. I thought, yeah, it's often what it feels like with a Linux box, too.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I wrote it specifically about Python because that's what I'm was currently struggling with, a large Python project. But this happens in everything, right? This could happen on your .NET with NuGet. This could happen with, you know, your Ruby gems, your Java jars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, so on and so forth. It is, you know, as projects mature, and this one is 4 or 5 years that's been in production, something like that. You know how it is, right? You get some cruft, right? You get some rust on the iron. You get some...
Yeah, of course.
You know, and every once in a while, there's a must-do update of a package, right? I like to keep things on, you know, whatever that ecosystem's equivalent of an LTS is. You know, so because security updates generally aren't breaking, except for that one Heartbleed OpenSSL disaster. But, you know, most of the time you're fine. But eventually you do have to do the big lift. And I've done this, a bunch of times, but... This one was particularly challenging, mostly because I'm using it's Python, right? It's a pip package that is no longer maintained. And that, you get drift over time.
Absolutely.
It ended up being I just re-implemented the functionality. But it got me thinking, like, geez, you know, we run these commands, you know, whatever, bundle update, pip, you know, pip update, whatever. Also, just side note, if you are doing large-scale Python projects, take a look at Poetry. I have yet to use it in production. It is an alternative to pip. It seems a little smarter about how it handles kind of negotiating different packages, sub-dependencies, etc., getting you to somewhere sane. One of my issues was I had to update the language, too. So it's like, do I keep this old package? There were a few of these, right? Do we keep these old packages?
Yep,
that?
Yep.
I mean, I can go in, fork it, and just override what language, what version of Python it says it supports.
Yeah, but there lies the path of pain eventually.
Right, and then it's like, oh, then I have to go back and tell the customer, yeah, so we're running a bunch of unsupported stuff now.
Yeah.
You know.
I am the support.
When in reality, these packages were basically, things that used to be hard 5 years ago, but you can just kind of, I ended up doing a lot of it in just JavaScript, just writing it myself. It took me like a day or two. So I'm like, these convenience packages to make Jinja do things I probably should have done in JavaScript the first time is maybe not worth it.
So I'm guessing then, because I was going to come on here and I was going to be like, well, Mike, don't you know about virtual environments that you can create to just sort of manage all your dependencies in their own isolated environment, Mike? But actually, what you're talking about, virtual environments don't solve that problem.
It wouldn't. And these are already containerized, right? Even back in those dark days, I had the wisdom of Docker. But dare I say, the light of the whale.
You know?
Stay a while and listen.
I think that deserves a Deckard.
Yeah. Now, granted, it's not Docker in the way I would do it now because it's a lot more work and I don't have a fancy GitHub action set up. But I do now, because part of my little upgrade thing was I enjoy being able to just do a pull request and, you know, not have to remember to manually deploy, something I am notorious for not doing before the demo.
Oh, no, really?
You show up
and you're like, oh, this is the totally wrong version.
Yeah, and I have to like quickly switch the screen to like my local host.
And I totally know what I'm doing, I promise.
Yeah, yeah. That is one of my many quirks.
I feel like that's something I would do too.
Well, because you know what it is too? Everything new is defined as like a year or two. I basically set up a GitHub action for it and it deploys it for me.
Sure.
So, you know, I don't do full Git flow, but like there's a branch called staging. If you merge into staging, guess what happens, right? It's pretty, you know, pretty straightforward. So, yeah. But this got me thinking, because was it 2 or 3 weeks ago we had the Biden White House was talking about unsafe code and C++.
Using memory safe code. Yep.
Right. And then we had that story. We've had a couple of them about NPM vulnerabilities.
Like
fraudulent packages.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of feedback on that. I think we covered some of it last week. It got me thinking, you know what? It isn't just, you know, the Ruskies out there trying to hack your stuff. And no offense to Ruskies, right? Privyet, comrades. It could just be bit rot. Like, seriously, you could just be relying on some old jank version of some package that either A, has a vulnerability, or simply isn't stable with, I don't know, what the new version of your framework, right?
Yeah, whatever. Or just calls an API that's out of date.
Right, and it doesn't need to be as obvious as I've updated, you know, Flask and or Rails or whatever. It could be, well, actually, this depends on this other package, which depends on this other package. But now the new version of insert other major package here requires a newer version of that package three layers down. And oh, crap, now pip is not going to do the install because you have a conflict.
Yeah. Pip's, all right, I'm out.
Well, pip correctly won't do the install, right? Because you can't have, right, you have to, your virtual environment has to have, you know, sanity.
I hope you have a solution here because you've painted a very bleak picture.
Well, this is one of those lame, you know, Coder Radio lack of solutions. The solution is don't try to convince people to buy maintenance contracts and don't wait 5 years.
Yeah.
Right. It's a tough sell because no one wants to. The problem is it's one of those things. It's well, you and I know this, right? And maybe I should just be, when you're not in shape, right? And I think you and I have definitely both.
I might have some experience with this. Yeah.
The longer you let it go, it's like a credit card. The longer you let it go, the bigger that debt increases.
Yeah, it compounds.
I mean, this is the purest case of technical debt in a way.
Yeah.
But it's a tough sell because, you know, I feel the same way. I talked to a client. Like, we should do, you know, quarterly, just like package updates or even every 6 months. And it'll cost this. And they're like, yeah, but we got to do forward development. Or, yeah, but, you know, costs. And then a year goes by, 2 years go by. And the thing that always spurs action is, especially in regulated industries, oh, we can't have anything that is out of compliance with, like, whatever it is, ISO 9100 or whatever standard it is. Well, it turns out to get that one thing in compliance because we waited so long requires, you know, it could be as much as a man week or two, you know, of work, which is crazy. But in extreme cases, that could be true, especially if it's like you're on an old version of Linux and you need to up that too. So there's a lot of weird stuff that can go on.
You're just giving me PTSD just talking about that. You know,
I bet you've had some bad distro. Yeah.
I mean, back in the day Red Hat has always been very popular. But back in the day, RPM didn't have proper dependency resolution. So you could really get stuck in a project where like Apache and an Apache module had to get upgraded as well along with the project. And so it was a coordination nightmare. Yeah. Yeah. That's stressful.
Wes brings up a great point. If you have a good CI and tests, you can do a kind of a soft update, right? Soft bump of your versions and just see how much pain you're in for, right? How many tests all of a sudden fail.
Yeah, definitely having tooling like that makes this easier. It's like there's got to be layers you can put on top of this to at least make it more addressable. But
well, and this is where I know we're basically shills for Docker, who should sponsor the show, but apparently don't love us. This is where having a quick containerized deployment really helps, because you can just throw up some isolated version of the application that is on, I don't know, let's like Rails 8 is all the new hotness, right? If you've been on any of the Ruby websites, everybody, they're all excited about Rails 8. Well, if you're upgrading from like Rails 5, that's going to be a trip. But being able to spin up a new container kind of isolates things, makes it a little easier for you.
Yeah, man. I realized because I've become a big Nix fan, and Nix kind of provides some alternative ways to do isolation, at least from a dependency standpoint, and whatnot. But now kind of taking a step back from the Docker, because I also was like, just deploy with Docker, all the time. Now taking a step back, I have gained a whole new level of appreciation for how entrenched the container workflow is in corporate America and software development. And it feels like one of those skill sets that's going to be valid for 20 years plus. It's like entrenched in IT and the way we deploy and develop software.
Oh, yeah. They know Docker now. I remember when I first started using it, I had to kind of explain, no, it's not it's not a virtual machine. It's not like your VMware
right,
kind of thing.
Right,
it can
right.
work inside of it, though.
For so long, the conversation, well, why not just use a VM?
Well, isn't that what happened with early Apache and Linux, right? You had to kind of bring the horse to water.
True. Yeah. All the ways you could run like subdomains off of one Apache server.
You speak lies. You need a Windows license for each of those.
Speaking of Windows, why not bundle it all together in a subscription with a cheap mini PC? We mentioned that the Microsoft Ignite event was going on. And of course, there's always announcements. What do you think of this, Mike? It's a $350 mini PC that streams Windows from the cloud. It's called the Windows 365 Link. It's a new class of dedicated boot-to-cloud PCs. This is the one from Microsoft. They'll be expanding it to OEMs in 2025. It launches in April. It has a fanless Intel chip. It's got, I think, Ethernet and Wi-Fi 6E, 8 gigs of RAM, 64 gigabytes of storage, which you're not going to use. It has like this super micro version of Windows. It might be one that's been out before, or it might be a new build. And the idea is that it's part of Microsoft's Copilot Plus ecosystem. So they promise a, quote, high fidelity experience that takes only seconds to boot and it wakes instantly from sleep. So, I mean, say maybe you also have to tack on a $30 a month membership to, monthly to this.
So I spent my morning or part of it doing tech support for everybody's favorite peripheral, printer.
Oh, yeah.
On Windows from 1,000 miles or 2,000. I don't know. How far is New Jersey from Tampa? I don't remember. I think it's only 1,000 miles. I can't imagine if it was one of these machines. So first of all, I got to tell you, and then I'm going to let you go because I know more of your area. Doesn't Comcast still exist?
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to stream the whole OS. That's the plan.
High fidelity.
I don't believe you.
Yeah. I mean, certainly for some corporations.
Yeah, if you've, or you're me and you have fiber in your house, sure, go ahead, knock yourself.
If they could, RDP is pretty robust. If they could smooth some of that out, their pitch is it's really about the AI upsell here. In fact, a lot of what I think we're going to see coming out of Microsoft, you could just sort of look at through the lens of this is an upsell for AI. What Microsoft is trying to solve here is, hey, in their video demonstration of this PC, like they're showing predominantly Excel spreadsheets, right? So they're clearly targeting the office.
Oh, of course.
Corporations love a $350 PC that they can just throw out and replace instantly. Hot swap, right? No, you don't even repair the thing anymore. And the idea that Microsoft's trying to sell is, we're going to 10x the productivity of your staff if you use Copilot. But to use Copilot, you need to get a $2,500 PC that has NPUs and runs the latest Windows 11. And maybe you haven't even integrated Windows 11 into your network yet. You're still on Windows 10. You don't have a single machine with an NPU. But you want to get this efficiency gain to your staff because your secretaries are going to 10X. And so what you do is you get them a Copilot PC. And the whole idea, right, is Microsoft, in the like the literature about this Link PC, they write, the Microsoft Windows 360, Microsoft Windows 365 will come out next year and support many of Windows 11's advanced Copilot features, meaning devices without an NPU will soon be able to utilize features like Windows Recall, Click to Do, and AI Search when streaming Windows 11 from the cloud.
Okay, so this is an end run around the problem of needing better hardware and therefore a more expensive sticker price.
This is what I think. Yeah, this is what I... And
So the 365 subscription now. Let's say I'm an enterprise, right? Let's call it, Halliburton. I'm Halliburton. Call me Dick. Is this part of my three? Is this just like an upsell in 365, or do I have to?
I think so. I think it's an on top. It's an on top. So you know.
Oh, they might go for that then. If it's just like a slight incremental operating cost, they might do that.
I know. I know, especially for a slight incremental operating cost, which is probably going to be somewhat tax write off because it's a cost to do business. Plus, the machines are only $350, so you could buy a couple of them and have a couple on the shelf.
Well, and you've already laid your, you know, demonically fast fiber to do whatever it is they do.
It just feels like so much of this actually, like, okay, practical side, all of this kind of seems like a reasonable sell to enterprise customers without the Copilot stuff. But that's not how Microsoft is selling this. They're really pitching this on Copilot drawing people to this platform. Like, they think their LLM is so good that you're going to change your hardware paradigm from local workstations managed, you know, by Active Directory with group policy and an IT staff. Maybe you have some sort of other management suite on there. Maybe you got 1Password extended access management layered on top of that. Like, you've got a whole system and you're going to swap all that out because of the crushingly awesome returns on time and gains that Copilot's going to offer. That's the pitch here.
Well, also, I'm thinking from a compliance perspective, you have to let somebody go or somebody, you know, God forbid there's some sort of misconduct. All you, in theory, right? Because this is, we're talking enterprise here. So when we say 365, we're really talking about like enterprise Active Directory or even the GovCloud. And if you don't know what that is, it's always fun to integrate with. I'm imagining this is how this would work. I suspend, you know, dumbass at my organization's account from our, you know, enterprise 365. And they just simply can't even get into the machine, all the files. Since the files are not on the machine, there's no risk of leakage or misappropriation or anything like
it's
that.
It's beautiful.
It is pretty beautiful.
I would hate it. I would hate it. I would
never let one of my relatives buy one of these because I'm not supporting it. But
you know. No. As a staffer, I would just absolutely hate this.
Do we have any indication on what they think the lifespan of these guys is?
Years, right? Because they're just continually upgrading the service. All you need is an RDP endpoint, essentially.
And it's fanless, so you don't have the moving...
Okay. Fanless, yeah. It's got a bunch of USB on there. They've optimized it to work great in team video calls, too, so it'll work with your webcam, and they say it'll give you crystal clear team video calls.
Well, isn't that what everybody wants? A dedicated Microsoft Teams box?
Yeah, man. I in fact, if I could maybe have two so I could also have a dedicated Outlook machine, then I'd really be cooking, you know?
Do you know, if we can pitch this to the government, we could close half the prisons. Because what punishment will scare people straight more than being on multiple Teams meetings at the same time?
There you go. So, you and I are kind of MetaQuest fans. I'd say you and I are probably more fans of what could be than what is today.
Except for that Batman game.
Yeah, and honestly,
some
of those Star Wars games, too, like where you're lightsaber fighting and stuff,
yeah,
legit.
Yeah.
But it looks like Windows 11 is coming to the Meta Quest 3 and 3S headsets in December.
God damn it.
Yeah. So it's essentially, you can remote desktop your Windows PC or bring in that Windows 365 cloud PC we just talked about. You're going to be able to remotely access your cloud workstation inside the Quest. Not bad.
Or at least it's not like installing Windows on it.
And you know, it sounds ridiculous to somebody listening, but it takes about 30 seconds to pair a Bluetooth keyboard and mouse with the Quest. And then, you know, you've got a physical keyboard in a virtual environment. It's kind of awesome. And it's going to have multiple virtual monitor support, so it's already better than the Apple Vision Pro. Although the Vision Pro did just release ultra wide, which looks slick. Yeah. It's also going to support 3D in there.
Oh, I know some dudes who live in CAD that would would totally, if it was good enough quality, would totally go for this.
And it'll integrate with the Xbox controller. So you can use the Xbox controller.
I thought it already does.
Yeah, it does. But they're going to make sure all that works with the Windows remote stuff. So, yeah.
Wait a minute. So could I get on Windows and then go on, what do they call it, xCloud?
Yes.
Oh, my God. You're telling me I could play an emulated version of Super Street Fighter 2 from 1992?
Yes. In the Quest.
In the Quest. Completely immersed, realizing that I still suck.
Already working. Yep. It's already there. Also, some 365 apps are actually already compatible, Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, so you could do big Excel spreadsheets in there.
So if your accountant really wants to break your spirit, she tells you to put on the Quest first, then sends you all the red ink in the Excel sheet.
I'm surprised you hadn't asked, but you'll be relieved to hear that top-notch Teams integration is included as well.
I assumed it's like the Matrix, but it's going in the back of our neck.
You gotta have top-notch team integration. Okay.
I just hate Teams.
I'm so sorry for people out there that have to use it.
Ugh.
All right. One last Microsoft story. It's a big Microsoft day. Microsoft has announced a new Windows Resiliency Initiative, which the whole point, they say, is to avoid another CrowdStrike incident. So some of this is new features. There's going to be a quick machine recovery, a new feature that enables remote fixes for non-booting systems through improved Windows recovery environments. So they're upgrading that too.
That's a good idea.
New security vendor requirements, which include better testing, monitoring, and a gradual rollout of procedures for Microsoft Virus Initiative partners. I assume that means kernel access.
But isn't it going to be like a special class of folks who can access? I don't think they're going to open up the kernel.
Yeah, here's what they're going to do. This special class of partners is going to get access to a new outside of kernel mode.
Yeah.
A framework to move processing outside of the kernel, they say. There's also going to be a new Windows 11 feature granting temporary admin rights for specific tasks for Windows Hello.
Sure.
Yeah. And a gradual transition from C++ to what do you think?
God damn it. Is that what's been pinching me all day?
To Rust. Yep. So Microsoft is committed to moving more components of Windows to Rust.
They should just call this the Joe Biden update. This is, I don't know what happened. The man comes out and says, no C++. And here we go. Everybody's moving.
Yep. The White House says it. And now Microsoft does it. I mean, this is good to see. I have been really critical of Microsoft's response to CrowdStrike. This actually feels like the appropriate response that we needed to see.
Yeah.
It probably just took them a while to put it all together, right?
I definitely feel there's a little bit of weasel wording in that kernel stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that's because they don't want to upset our good friends in a certain union of Europe who, you know, yeah.
Coder.show/membership. Thank you to our Coder QA crew who has been keeping us going and the boosters who keep this show on the air. I'm also opening up this spot right now, which you're listening to our community sponsors. Perhaps folks that are in the audience at the podcast ad market has collapsed. Please save our show discounted rate. You can get more details by emailing me, chris@jupiterbroadcasting.com. I actually think it'd be pretty neat to feature a listener's like business or product or service or whatever it might be. We might as well, right? We got these spots available, and I can only tell you about the membership so many times. So chris@jupiterbroadcasting.com if you'd like to set up a short-run sponsorship or who knows. Maybe it becomes a long-term fling, you know what I'm saying? In the meantime, if you're not in a position to sponsor us, you, of course, can set your support on autopilot with our membership program. We have one for the entire network and one for the podcast. The podcast one is coder.show/membership. The network one is jupiter.party. But a lot of you, I've learned, like to just support at your own cadence, at your own amount, on your own time, at your own frequency, on your own terms, and that's where the boost comes in. You just need a new podcast app, podcastapps.com. Apps like Fountain make it really easy to get started. But there's a plethora of choices out there. So you just grab one of those new podcast apps, you load it up, and you boost in, and a message above 2,000 sats, we'll read it right here on the show. You support the show, we get to read your message, we have a lot of fun with it. Either way you go, we really appreciate it. And our members, they now get something kind of brand new. It's sort of soft launch. It's a soft launch! I'm working on it still, so it's a soft launch! But I'm going to try handing out like the whole bootleg version of the stream It got over like over 100 and something downloads last time I tried it. So it seemed like the first trial went pretty well, although I heard from none of you. But it seemed like the first trial went pretty well. I've probably already said all this, but just so you know, there is going to be a live stream version available, which does have some pre-show stuff in it. And that's just as a thank you to our members, too. So you can get that by going to coder.show/membership. There you go. Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you for your support. Well, as we record, there's some breaking news.
This is CNN Breaking News.
Shares of Google parent company Alphabet ticking higher today despite a report that the DOJ will call for Google to sell off its Chrome browser as part of its search monopoly remedies. But could that end up limiting Google in the AI race as well? Deirdre Bosa has more on the potential fallout for today's tech check. How is it all connected, Deirdre?
Well, first, Sarah, as you mentioned, Google shares, yes, quickly recovered from those headlines last night, slightly higher this morning, suggesting that investors don't think a Chrome sale is actually going to happen, or at least that it's a long way off. And there are variables like appeals and a new administration, by the way, that will factor in.
So as we record today, there is word that the DOJ may recommend that Google is forcibly sold off. I don't know, maybe forced to sell off Google Chrome. And as you're listening to this as the released version, you may have more direction on this. But it's pretty massive. It's pretty aggressive if you think about something like Chrome, which was created inside of Google very strategically so and is a key part to their overall business strategy. The requirement would be also to separate Android search from Google Play services and new advertising controls that would give advertisers more information about how their ad is received. And Bloomberg also reports that the DOJ may recommend that Google be forced to share some of the data they collect with some of their competitors and other companies. And then some restrictions on types of products like this would be placed in the future. Google has responded through a VP of, I guess they have like a VP dedicated to just regulatory problems, saying that this is a, quote, radical agenda that goes beyond the case's legal scope.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta say, if I'm putting my chips down, here's probably what I think is gonna happen. Google is going to be disallowed from making the kind of deals they had with Dell, which for folks who don't know, Google basically paid Dell to make Chrome, like, you know, prominent and a default and all that. They do that with a lot of PC vendors. I don't see how they're going to be forced to share data with competitors. And I would be very, very surprised if they had to sell Chrome. Because, you know, their Chrome, it's the dominant browser now. It wasn't always, right?
Well, and think about who would want this. It's a massive support overhead. It's a ginormous project.
Huge security target.
You'd probably have to acqui-hire or somehow take some of the team. And then how do you make money from it?
Well, right. The irony is, okay, let's say you're Chrome Inc., right? You're
yeah.
Chrome Corp.
How do you make
Chrome
money?
If you're, well, here's how you make money. The first thing you do is call your former employers at Google and be like, so let's make a deal.
And bake ads in and bake in search. And yeah.
You're going to be doing the same thing. It doesn't make sense. I would see that the kind of hanky-panky deals with like Apple and with Dell and with the other PC manufacturers regarding default search engines and making Chrome more prominent in browser selection, I could see that probably needs to go. Ironically, I'm now using Chrome on my iPhone and my Mac. So.
There's also, there's a few things I like in here. There's a bit in here about give Google websites more options to prevent their content from being used by Google's artificial intelligence projects. That's one that I would be for. Check this out. This was just this morning from Google's Notebook LM.
Hello, friends, and welcome into Jupiter Broadcasting's weekly talk show, taking a pragmatic look at the art and business of software development and the world of technology. Brent, install my diesel heater already.
So that is just Notebook LM. Within a few seconds, Wes got it to use my voice. And we can get it to use other team members' voice as well. Here's another version.
Friends, and welcome into Jupiter Broadcasting's weekly talk show.
It sounds a lot like me, and sometimes they sound a lot like me. Here's another example.
Hello, friend, and welcome into Jupiter Broadcasting's weekly talk show, taking a pragmatic look at the art and business of software development.
So, yeah, I would love to be able to say, yeah, don't include my voice, because the problem I have is that it uses my voice in their products when somebody requests information about Linux and open source. So it generates a podcast using my voice talking about the very things that I talk about, but it doesn't talk about them correctly. So yeah, I'd love to see in there. I also think separating Android out from Google Play services a bit more would be a better thing for the entire Android ecosystem.
Ugh, yeah, but if you're an Android developer, yeah, you don't want to go back to that.
I know. That's where I'm torn.
I mean, I agree with you. It's just...
Yeah, I know.
It was real bad.
I agree. But also, you have to ask yourself, if Google were forced to sell Chrome, could they still be the top contributor to Chromium? Or is that not allowed? Because it's also an open source project. So does the DOJ dictate what open source projects Google can contribute to?
No, I don't think that'd be possible. I mean, I just don't see it. I mean, I feel like this is one of those things that lawyers often do where they ask for everything.
Yeah.
Knowing that they're this is why lawyers have a bad reputation.
They
right?
go scorched
they
earth.
They seem like
and
huge dicks.
And then they, right. when you walk back, they're still giving
them a lot. Yeah. Right.
Uh-huh.
It's, yeah. I don't think that, you know, the DOJ lawyers are very competent professionals. They're not stupid. They know that a judge isn't going to be like, you're absolutely right. Let's shatter it into a million pieces. Right. It's just,
well, let me ask you this.
This is a negotiating tactic.
Let me ask you this. If you could solve for some of this, like say Google was still allowed to contribute, and so they just went from owning Chrome to contributing to Chromium, I don't know, Microsoft, Apple, somebody comes along and they somehow now own Chrome, the brand and the product. And, you know, some of these questions around should they be sharing data, like that stuff gets answered properly. Wouldn't you feel a little bit better if Google didn't have the world's largest web browser and the world's largest search and all this other stuff? Like, it wouldn't the world actually be better off long term if Google wasn't the master of Chrome?
I don't think that's necessarily true. Because then an independent Chrome needs to make sufficient money to justify some sort of
In this fantasy scenario of mine, Microsoft buys it and they keep it as is just because it's what they use for Edge.
Yeah, okay, if we're in Equestria with Twilight Sparkle and Pinkie Pie, great, then everything's open source and the fight's over and, yeah, you know, let's go get ice cream sundaes.
Okay, I like this.
But if we're, you know, descending back into reality, I feel like, one, it's not realistic for them to spit out Chrome. The real thing that is the heart of this case is just the massive amount of shady deals Google does to leverage their, you know, search monopoly in other ways. But in terms of the browser, if you believe the things that have come out, many of in this case and other leaks from Google, they're afraid of all this LLM AI stuff. Now, I know you and I are a little more skeptical, but I look at where Google's placing their effort. And I don't know, is there any big new Chrome or, you know, Chromium or just say open web APIs that really, really matter in the last year? Or is it all get to my AI agent as quickly as possible?
Well, okay, I turn the question over to the audience. Are we essentially admitting here that we have to have the backing of a giant company to make a usable browser?
You're supposed!
And should Google be forced to sell off Chrome? Why or why not? Tell us what you think. Boost in. And let us know, because I feel like this isn't an issue I'm going to freak out about. Like, if the DOJ goes forward, I'm not going to panic. And if they don't go forward, I don't know. I think the dreamer in me is thinking of a web that Google has a little less influence over.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the more exciting outcome is if the DOJ sets a precedent where the big tech companies can't make these sweetheart deals with hardware vendors and carriers to say, you know, because to me, that's where the control is in the, you know, in all these systems, right?
It's also interesting, just as we're wrapping up here, that this is accelerated after the election when a new regime comes in and Lina Khan is out. And there's probably going to be a much more business-friendly administration.
Yeah, but the business in question is Google.
Right. And this whole thing, this antitrust thing started under Trump V1.
Yeah, I feel like the whole Republicans are more business friendly. It's not going to really necessarily fly in this case because they hate Google.
True. Right. Mm. All right. Yeah, okay. Well, so. Boost in. Tell us what you think.
4 score and 7 boosts to go.
And I am very happy to say that our first boost this, and Wes is in the chat room, so Wes, this is great to hear. Our first boost, and it's our baller boost, is from Cessna Mike. Hey, Rich Lobster! I am very glad to hear from Cessna Mike. He is one of our favorite listeners, and we think about and talk about him often. We've been talking about how we haven't heard from him for a while. And he writes, I am clearing out my Albi hosted wallet as they are wrapping things up in January. In case nobody's told you, you're all pretty funny. I had a serious chuckle listening to Coder Lup and Self-Hosted last week. I'd like to shout out HTMLX. I've been using it to simplify front-end development with my Go projects. Using plain old HTML rendering in the browser has just been refreshing. I recommend giving it a try to anyone exhausted from front-end JavaScript frameworks. Hopefully our paths will cross soon. I hope so, Cessna Mike. In fact, if you need any help setting up Albi Hub, just reach out to me directly, chris@jupiterbroadcasting.com. I'd love to help you get going on that just because we love hearing from you. And thank you for boosting in. And Wes in the chat room says he's glad to hear from you too. CB comes in with 2,525 sats. And he's responding to last week's episode. I tried to stream some sats, but I was having errors. And I'll look into that. You're the like third or fourth person that reported that. So he sent some sats to make up for it.
Well, let's hear it, good buddy.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that.
Nice.
Yukon Cornelius comes in with 9,001 sats.
Oh my God, this drawer is filled with Fruit Loops.
Yeah, and that's also over 9,000.
It's over 9,000!
Celebrating breaking through 90,000 for Bitcoin. Also celebrating the new members live feed, a feature I've been waiting for a while. Onwards to episode 600. Oh, that's great. Thank you, sir. Yep.
Hell was that? Spaceball 1. They've gone to plaid.
The Bitcoin ETF, which 11 months ago I opened the show with saying that the tech industry was sleeping on and that they were missing the fact that an open source project was just listed as an ETF on the U.S. stock market. That ETF is now the most successful launch in ETF history and already has, in 11 months, more funds, more money in it than the gold ETF, which is 20 years old. And today they just launched options, which is making the Bitcoin price skyrocket and the ETF skyrocket. So anybody who, I'm no financial advisor or anything like that, but anybody's like, hey, maybe that Chris guy's been onto a few things and bought that ETF. You're up more than double. What is it, like 170% return since that episode?
I'm so sad right now.
thank you, Yukon, for the boost. It's fun. BitCryptic comes in with 2,048 sats.
This is a tasty burger.
On the challenge of typo squatting in the software repos, it feels like this is something we could solve or at least improve with key pairs and passkeys or something. First time you use a repo, you get promoted to establish a co-signing relationship. Each time you come back, a handshake takes place. If everything matches, you silently get the code you're requesting. No match triggers an airflow with warnings and no download. You know,
that's interesting.
There are people that are experimenting with, you know how like we have a membership program and the Coderly, we do the Coderlies and we put them behind the membership feed. There's no way to like get access to the Coderly one-off unless you become a member and then you get access to all of them. And there are people that are playing with the ability to boost in and then that unlocks a file download. And the way they do that is with Nostr keys. It's you basically have a Nostr identity. That Nostr identity is granted access to the file and it checks your key. And if your key matches, you get. And this isn't built yet, but people are working on this right now. I think there's something to it. I just think it's going to take us a while to sort it all out. Maybe you should, you know, build it. Or at least write up a spec, BitCryptic. I don't know.
That is an interesting idea.
Right? I could see something there. All right. Thank you very much for the boost. Appreciate it. Watsy, also known as Ryan, comes in with 10,000 sats.
Put some macaroni and cheese on there, too.
No message, though. Just the value. So thank you very much. And then Mr. Nick 86 came in with 5,001 sats.
Well,
he says, love you guys. I need an op-ed general news show with Mike and Chris caressing in and out of my sound holes.
Well,
that was sent live, too.
That's going to have to be after dark, I think.
There you go. Coder after dark. Yeah, you know, for a hot minute, I did a couple of takes at a daily tech news show? That's a lot of work, let me tell
well,
you.
Well, if they go deep into the JB feeds, I think we still have some of our election coverage stuff we did.
Oh, way, way back. Like way 20, back. 2016? I don't know.
And we never could have imagined the comedic value we'd have now.
Yeah. I'm sitting here reading the boost, and I look out my window in the studio, and there's this huge, fat cat sitting on the fence looking right at me, watching me do the show. So I got...
I honestly thought you were going to say there was a man caressing the inside of his earlobe.
Getting some umaks?
Exactly. Oh, that's a deep Ferengi reference.
You got it, buddy. All right. Thank you, everybody, who supported the show this week, including our members, and of course, those of you who boosted it. Now, we had 19 of you streaming sats as you listened. We stacked 32,920 sats from the streamers. When you combine that with the boosters, we had a total of 127,729 sats sent in this week. Thank you, everyone who supports the show, either with your membership or with a boost. You can boost in if you'd like to get in on the fun with a new podcast app at podcastapps.com. Fountain makes it the easiest, and then there's just layers up from there. You can go full self-hosted. And if you're looking for a quick way to get sats, Strike, they're in over 100 countries, makes it really easy, very trusted company. If you're in Canada, bitcoinwell.com. And in the US, I also really like River. And you can then attach those to your account and send them in as a boost.
Nice.
Thank you, everybody.
So, Chris.
Yes, sir.
You know who's not enjoying some umaks together?
Definitely. Sam and Elon. They are no umaks there. No umaks.
You hate to see a messy breakup like this.
Yeah, and you know, you and I are fortunate that every now and then the emails come out and we get access. It's always so great. It's always so great. And so it
is
seems...
It, or is it terrible but hilarious at the same time?
Boy, you know, this is an interesting little story that goes back between the early chat between Sam and Elon and the foundation of OpenAI in 2015. Where Elon throws in somewhere between $50 and $100 million. And what you read through there is Elon Musk was freaked out about Google DeepMind and was super concerned about DeepMind creating some kind of AI monopoly and not only owning the entire AI space, but becoming a black hole of AI talent as well. And so they were trying to put together enough money to pay people, you know, $200,000 a year to retain talent. But tensions seem evident, I don't know, almost immediately. They kind of come to a blowout in 2018. Things really kind of go sideways when Microsoft starts sniffing around in 2016. Musk said that Microsoft was, quote, Musk said that a deal between OpenAI and Microsoft would make OpenAI, quote, Microsoft's marketing bitch, end quote.
It's just quality. And I would say that that has not happened.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's more like Microsoft is using OpenAI's brand to sell their products.
Yeah, I feel like it's very much the other way. And they're desperately trying to rebrand to Copilot, right? They're trying to just everything gets the Copilot stamp now.
Where do you think all this leads? You know, also at the same time, this past weekend was the 1 year anniversary from Sam's crazy weekend of getting fired and being back. There's more talk about, you know, restructuring into a profit company. That's picking up.
That's happening.
I don't think Elon's letting this go. So where does this go next? Does it?
You know, man, I would never count Sam out. Sam is proven to be. Like, imagine the Wile E. Coyote if he was actually competent. Like, this Sam
is. I agree,
is,
but I would kind of say the same about Elon. And also, one of them is sitting at Mar-a-Lago right now, and one of them.
That could be a problem. Right. But I feel like Sam has the ability to charm a Trump. Why not?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Also, you know, one of the things that I'm finding super interesting is the whole Microsoft. Like, Elon was afraid they'd be there. What was it? Marketing bitch? Was that the.
Yeah.
Okay. I almost feel like Sam got one over on Satya and Microsoft. It sure seems that way, at least to me. I know this has been my bacon for a month or two now, but
I hope somebody writes a book on how masterfully Sam Altman introduced OpenAI to the world.
Dude, if this guy was on Game of Thrones, the show would have been three episodes long and he'd be on the Iron Throne.
Yeah, in a genius move that no one, unless they were a brilliant psychopath, No one would have thought of introducing their product to the world with how dangerous it is, right? He led with the danger.
Right.
No one would have thought to do that. Everyone would have thought to downplay the danger and upplay all the innovation. But he led with the danger and then said the danger is worth it because of what it will do for us. And it's so powerful that we're freaking out about safety, and it's a top concern of ours because this thing we've made is so powerful, which is what you'd say if you just made like the nuclear bomb, right?
Well, we've mentioned kind of in passing on a few of the shows recently, the curl clutching on a lot of the more, you know, larger tech podcasts, right? And I just realized something. That is his entire, like most of his marketing strategy.
You got it.
And every time they all play into it.
Every
time someone says OpenAI disinformation, that's a free, very expensive ad for him.
Yeah.
Because you know what? If it bleeds, it leads. That was the old expression that they taught us when I went back.
And Sam is very serious about solving that problem. He's very serious.
Yeah, but he's so transparently not. Like, I feel like he's almost selling, like, we, you know, people make fun of like Mark Zuckerberg's like Lex Luthor or Commander Data, right? I think Sam Altman is like straight up Lex Luthor, and it's not that he's like, maybe, I don't know personally, obviously, but I think that's an image he is projecting on purpose. Right? This is so dangerous. I'm like super villain level good.
Okay.
Has he lost? I mean, they tried to kick him out, and literally it was, they were all lined up and, you know, metaphorically lined up in Times Square and gunned down. Microsoft, I feel like Microsoft tried to get some control over him, and that did not work.
Yeah.
Elon Musk, I mean, richest man in the world, it sure doesn't seem to be winning. So
I don't know. XAI is actually doing very well.
I think you're joking.
No, I'm not.
With whom? Who's buying it?
Well, I don't know the details, so if anybody does, please boost in, but it sounds like Tesla had made a massive order for the NVIDIA chips that they weren't ready to take advantage of, and so Elon redirected them to XAI, so they got a huge, huge jump on the latest NVIDIA hardware, and so it, they've also gotten a lot of funding recently. I just saw a story that another investor has come on board, and that it's officially become, XAI is its own independent separate company that's working with Twitter to provide Grok as a product. And if you use Grok, which I have been, it's pretty good. I don't think it's as good as Claude, you know, like for development work. But it is surprisingly spry. It is very up to date on the information on Twitter. And so,
is that a feature?
Well, it seems to be. It's aside for what this matters, it also has some of the fastest image generation, even of dedicated image generation services.
I will say it has the funniest image generation, which is what I care about.
That too. I think it's a contender. I don't know how serious, because
I don't know, man. You turned me on to Claude, and Claude is pretty good.
I think Claude's the best. Yeah. At least for, you're trying to build something, troubleshoot something. Perplexity, I think, is the best for current information. And I've heard OpenAI agents can be really good for specific subtasks. But
do you know what's real weird? Neither of us mentioned Gemini.
I think Gemini stinks.
Yeah, I've had a. It's good at like one thing, which is helping me proofread my letters that I write in Google Docs.
Yes. Yeah, that stuff. Yeah, but
yeah, but like also Microsoft Word can kind of, like, I could do that in a million other ways.
Yeah, or Grammarly, you know.
Grammarly works, right? Yeah, so.
Yeah, I wonder, and I think, you know, back to your question, I think how hard Elon fights Sam depends on the success of XAI. If XAI flops, then Elon fights this way. If XAI starts winning in the marketplace more, which we'll see, then I don't think he needs to fight. I think it all goes back to the plan to create the super app. So one day you'll do your shopping in X, you'll order your food in X, you'll do your chatting in X, and you'll talk to your AI assistant in X.
Which was Elon's dream since he got out of, like, since he stopped being a whatever he was.
I'm not interested in that. Not interested in that.
Yeah, I think the super app thing is, it's not going to happen. I don't know.
Oh, Wall Street loves the idea of the super app. They love it. They think it's the best, because they think it's like a digital shopping mall.
Well, it's like super Apple, right? Super locked in would be the
yeah.
You know, it's funny because I'm
super locked. That's what that's what we should call them. They're super locked apps. That's what
super
they are.
Locked. Yeah, right. I don't know. I see. I guess maybe I don't see the XAI stuff because I've been using Twitter a lot and less and less.
Yeah.
Only because the whole it downrates you now if you add external links. It defeats my primary purpose for using Twitter, which is, you know, promotion, show promotion, right? Promoting Alice, all that good stuff, promoting TMB. So having said that, I don't see me, I just don't think I need a service like that other than like occasionally sending memes out. I don't know. Maybe I'm just.
That's how I feel about Apple Intelligence too.
I don't use that. That's horrible.
I've not had an opportunity, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see. It is kind of fun. I'll put a link in the show notes to read through some of these emails and to just, you know, see the things they're concerned about, how it all plays out. Because it goes pretty far back to really the genesis of all of this.
Well, it's funny, and we should wrap up, but in the early emails, you can see the seeds of the breakup coming.
Yeah, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Where Sam's definitely trying to kind of be like, no, you're not the boss of me. And every once in a while, he definitely like is a little more, you know, compliant, let's say, or whatever, cooperative. But he's definitely, Sam was always going to be his own guy.
All right, well, is there anywhere you want to send the good peeps before we get out of here?
Yeah, go to alice.dev, check it out. It's good. Automation, some ETL stuff. If you're in construction, we have some specific stuff for you involving Autodesk Building Connected. And if you don't know what that is, you're probably not in construction. So,
well, I'll plus one that. Check that out. Of course, you can, if you want to mess around with keys and whatnot, you can find me on the Nostraverse, chrislas.com, or on WeaponX, same handle. Links to what we talked about today? Well, I'm so glad you asked. You can find those at coder.show/596. You'll also find our contact form over there. You can find our RSS feed, back catalog, all of that. Also, I'll just remind you, we do the show live on Tuesdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, assuming the studio doesn't blow away tonight. And we'd always, always love to have you join us because it just gives it a nice vibe. But if you can't make it, we just really appreciate you downloading and listening. That's really what counts. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Coder Radio, and we'll see you right back here next week.